You want this toward me, right?
Yeah, it's good. Actually, it goes like that there. It's perfect. It's kind of on the side of it.
Interesting.
Brian Baumgartner on the Eric Anders Lang Show. We're live.
Perfect.
We're going. There's no editing on the pod.
Okay.
Is that you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I feel like you can self-edit.
Yeah. And if I don't, well, who cares, really?
I mean, that's really a great life attitude that a lot of people don't right. adhere to. Tell me a little bit about
yourself.
Is there
anything we can't say?
You can curse. I've been trying not to.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know why.
Okay.
I think it's...
Family friendly?
Yeah, I just feel like it's a good subject. I guess, you know why? Here, I'm having a problem here because I got to look over here, but I'm having a problem with the audio. I keep messing with your dial.
Are we live already?
Yeah, I'm just rolling. This is totally unedited.
Okay, perfect.
So the reason why to not curse is because, well, you know Bill Burr.
I know who?
Bill Burr.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
So Bill, he was like the first podcast I really listened to.
Okay.
And he curses all the time.
Right.
And then I was like, I must curse.
Right.
And then I was like, do I really need to curse? Because I know that I make, I try to make inspiring content around finding the joy in the game of golf.
Right.
Who a man or woman might want to show that to their 8-year-old child.
Oh, right. Good.
But yeah. Not want to also encourage them to curse in school.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why I'm trying to trim down the cursing.
Okay, good. Good for you. I'm not going to.
I want
to
drop an F-bomb.
I'm just
going
to F it. I'm just going to F it. This or just this. By the way, if what you're looking for is inspiring content for people who love golf, this you came to the wrong guy.
You don't
guy.
Have it.
No.
You know, I went on your Wikipedia page, and you know, one of the things it says is, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on this, it says accomplished golfer.
Accomplished. Well, here's actually a very funny thing, and it came up recently, and it's amazing how many people sent it to me. I think for like the third time in history, Steve Carell, for some reason, was interviewed by Sports Illustrated and or ESPN. Like, there's been three sports interviews that he's given in his life. Uh-huh. And somehow he works in every time that I am amazing athlete. And he uses those, I'm an amazing athlete. I think at one point he called me a scratch golfer.
Really?
I'm not.
No.
No, but I think I'm just, like, to him, I'm good. And that means scratch. So then I'll be like, oh, I hear you're a scratch. No, I'm not.
He's just setting you up. Is this a prank?
Now, I will beat anyone.
Right.
Yes.
What does that mean?
I mean, at golf. I will win. But I'm not that good.
When you say you'll win, is that like a factor of handicap, or you're just a real like competitor?
Yeah, I'm a gamer.
You're a gamer.
Yeah.
What do you how do you is this just like a compulsion, or what is this?
Yes, probably. But I don't know. First of all, I only play for something.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay, so we're about to go
and
play.
And I don't trust people who won't do that.
Should we go play for watches?
I saw.
You got a nice watch.
So do you. Yeah, they're similar ish.
I don't know if I could
branded.
Play. I would be terrified to play you for my watch.
Really?
Should we? Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have. What do you got here? This is a Datejust.
I don't know. It's just a watch.
Doesn't even want to tell me.
No, it's just a watch. It's just a watch. I don't know. It's a
nicer
Seiko.
Than mine.
What's it?
It's
Seiko?
Not a Seiko. It's not a Seiko.
No, it doesn't have to be for a lot, but it has to be for something.
Really?
Yeah, because otherwise I find myself disinterested.
Okay.
So it's not really about, I mean, even if it's 5-5-10, 10-10-20, whatever.
Right.
I mean, if I'm really playing, I want to find a number that makes somebody uncomfortable, for sure.
You or them, or either.
No, for them. Yeah.
You want them to be uncomfortable.
Oh, of course.
Okay, so for me to be uncomfortable today... What's your handicap? Do you play straight up, or what do you? How does this work?
No, I play with a handicap, but my handicap is legitimate.
Okay, what is
100% legitimate. What am I?
You say 18. I'm not playing.
Oh no, no, it? No. My index is a 7.6.
Okay, same.
So here I play. Oh, same. Really?
Same ish. Where's my phone?
Same ish.
Hey, while I'm getting my handicap, can I get the black things for the mics? We're kind of popping them.
Uh oh.
We're gonna just make an adjustment.
Is it the P?
We're trying something. We need the pop filter. People in their cars are just crashing. We just killed 8 people. Hang on. I've got the GIN app right here. Let's see. I am currently, a 6. Oh,
oh
no.
Yes.
I can't be a
okay.
Six.
That's a 6-6.
I shot an 88 yesterday, maybe an 82. I don't know. I'll give you a shot.
Yeah.
I'll give you a shot, and that's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll give you a shot, and then I have to come up with a number?
Yeah, or not. I mean, it can be whatever.
Colt, I suggested we play for watches. Did you hear that? He said it's a Seiko. I said, that's not a Seiko.
It's a Seiko.
It's not a Seiko.
I don't know what a Seiko is, but I think it's a Seiko.
I don't know what a Seiko is. A Seiko is what our intern has.
Okay. I think it's that.
I think.
Give me your watch.
How did you start playing golf for money? Is that where you started at 20? You started later in life.
Now, people are going to go crazy because there was this thing in the office about my character and gambling and wanting to gamble and. I don't know. There's a Aces. What are we playing? Aces, Deuces, right. Barkies, Sandies,
right.
Wolf.
From Lakeside? Did that dialogue? Did you improvise that from Lakeside?
No.
They have Barkies.
Yeah. They have what is it? Polies. There's Polies, Barkies, Sandies.
So, before we get onto the subject that you originally intended, can you explain for the audience what you're talking about? What is a Barkie?
No, I don't do that stuff.
Okay.
That's like prop bets.
That's like crap.
Yeah, exactly. Throwing money in the middle, you're throwing that away, right?
A barkie
is a par after hitting a tree,
right?
Right, and a sandy would be a par after hitting it in the sand,
right?
But then there's like double sandies or double barkies, right? You hit it in the sand in the fairway, then the sand by the green, get up and down. That's a double sandy.
What is that? Is that worth a lot?
I don't play it. So right, I'm okay. But I think it is. You know what a poly is? That's a new one for me.
When you hit the pole?
No, a poly is when you make a putt that's longer than the pole. Than the flagpole. That's a poly.
You need like 8 scorecards to play these games.
I know, I don't. It's no, amazing. But I just like something.
It's amazing because the guys at Lakeside do play a complicated games, but with the amount that they drink, it's surprising that they can even keep track after 9.
I know, I can't. I can't, no, I can't do any of
it's
that.
It's a lot over there.
It's a lot, yes.
Maybe Lakeside doesn't have to do with the artificial lake. It's more about the amount of alcohol they consume.
Yes.
Okay, so you were starting to get into a story. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I don't remember what it was.
It was kind of about Kevin's line on the show.
Oh, yeah. So people are going to think that. But so I don't do all of that stuff. But I do like to play for something. For me, it truly is helpful. Because I feel like and that's the other thing is like the whole like practice. So I'm just going to hit 2 balls. I can't do that. I'm not mentally strong enough.
What do you mean?
That.
I'm going to hit 2 balls?
Well,
oh, you
like,
go out and play.
Yeah,
play
like you long. Go out and play, or you practice, or you go like, oh, I hit that one bad. Let me just drop another one and do. Then I can't. It's like if I'm not fully, it's hard enough to focus.
Interesting.
And if I start messing around like that, I can't do it. No, I'll go to the range, or if I'm out on the course, I want to play and I want to record something. And if I'm with somebody, which I don't really like, I don't like playing by myself.
Me neither.
I wanted play for something. And again, $5. Like it's not like it has to be huge.
Have you ever tried to uncover where that came from?
No. I mean, I think I played a lot of sports growing up. I am competitive. So I think that there's something in that, but I think again it's in golf it really is about you playing the course. I mean, truly, but I think, when you're out there, particularly with people that you play with a lot and you're playing match play as opposed to stroke play, then you can sort of find that competition.
Right. Are you like that in anything else? I mean, obviously,
I don't like to lose
outside
anything.
Of sports.
I don't like to lose anything.
Did you read the quote by Justin Thomas the other day that says, I dislike losing more than I enjoy winning?
That is so true.
That's
That's so true.
It made me feel like he must be very tormented.
Yes.
I felt bad for him.
Do you not feel that way?
I don't mind losing. I lose
really?
All the time. I lose every day. I just,
oh
and I'm okay with
God.
It.
God, I know. Well, so do I. But that's why, those small victories are so, they're just important, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get, yeah. Okay. Let me rewind. I don't get torn up either way.
Okay.
Like, I'm a huge Dodgers fan, for example, and I will, I'm really into it. The second the game is over, I'm good.
Gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
Great movie.
And
don't
I'm
care.
Really invested, like heavily invested.
During the game.
Yeah. And even the World Series, like, when I go to sleep that night, I'm not like torn up about it.
Right. Where do you like to
sit? It's about that feeling.
Where do you like to sit at the Chavez Ravine?
You know, well, I mean, if you can get in at the Dugout Club, that's amazing. That's funny. I think my favorite place to watch it, I had season tickets for a while, was the very front row of the loge.
Oh, interesting.
So
that's second level.
Yes. But you're not very far, and you're sitting up. I feel like you can see everything better. That's probably my favorite.
Spilling coffee. I found a relatively cheap seat, like 15 rows behind home plate. It was like $60.
Yeah,
This is reasonable.
Yes, you can.
So is baseball your kind of number one team sport?
No, I like them all. I really do.
What do you look for? Like, because for me, when I'm watching like NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, like I love them all. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too much about any of them in particular, right? I know the least about the NBA, but all I want to see is something close. And I don't really, you know, I don't have too much team pride. I just really want to see a close game. Extra innings is like, I love that. I love sudden death.
Right. Well, I remember back about close games, which was when like Gagne was on his huge streak as the closer of the Dodgers.
Okay.
And it was it was amazing when he came in and they played the music and everybody was there and it was super exciting and he was so dominant, and you would see fans almost rooting for the game to be in a closed situation so that he would come in. And if the Dodgers score in like the eighth inning, they put up like 3 runs and go up like 5-1. Everyone's gone because they know Gagne isn't going to come in. Or if it's a close game, they stay and watch that. So no, I get that. I like a good game too. I might be more invested team wise.
Did you see the? Do you remember when Arrieta threw a no hitter against the Dodgers like 3 or 4 years ago?
No, I don't remember.
I was at that game.
Were you?
With a diehard with a Bateman, Jason Bateman.
Oh, okay, sure.
And he's a diehard Dodger fan.
Yes,
like he's the Dodger fan that can't sleep.
Yes, that is correct. Yes,
and I am sitting next to him. He just, you know, and I'm like, I don't know whether to feel bad for him because the Dodgers are getting slammed, or to feel lucky to be in the presence of greatness.
Did was he at all happy?
It stung, but I think it was a good pain.
Okay.
You know, I think as a sports enthusiast, he understood that what he said he had never seen a no-hitter, actually.
Okay.
And we calculated he had been to 1,000 games.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because ever since a young child, he'd been going to games.
Yes, I'm sure.
And, funny enough, he did, at one point, around the fifth inning, experiment with heckling Jake. Because his feet are on the dugout. We're on Cubs dugout, which is the best spot for as far as he knows. And he goes, you know, because Jake's coming in and out of the front of the dugout. And Bateman goes, pretty good game tonight, Jake, you know. And you're throwing some strikes. And never saw Jake again. Always went through the far side of the dugout. And,
oh, my gosh.
But the entire audience was on their feet.
Yeah. When you're seeing something totally special in that way, there's nothing like that. There's nothing. I would be excited about that too.
You've played golf with some pretty elite athletes.
Yeah, a few.
A few.
Yeah. I mean, no one quite measures up to me, but yeah, so I'm not gonna give them that.
Referring to number 23. You played golf with Michael Jordan multiple times.
Yes.
He invites you to play golf.
I mean, we've played several times.
He says, let's, what does he say? What is the text? Is he in your phone texting you saying, let's play?
I don't know.
I need to know.
I mean.
What is the protocol for playing golf with Michael Jordan?
I'll tell you this. This the very first time that it was at his charity event in the Bahamas. And this has been, I don't know, 12 years ago, whatever. And there was always, you had a partner and then you were paired up, and the night before they would always tell you like who you were paired up with. And the very first time I was paired up and I saw the sheet and I was playing, he wasn't my partner, but I was paired up against him. I did not sleep that night.
Really?
Yes. I did not sleep that night. Yeah. The other one at his same event, the other one was Lawrence Taylor.
Whoa. I'm a huge Giants fan.
Oh, are you? Yes. Lawrence Taylor. He was actually my partner. We were named partners for over a 2-day period of time.
Oh.
And that was maybe a year before. I was definitely worse. And I went to bed thinking, he is going to hate me. He is going to hate me. This is going to be miserable. Oh my God, he's going to kill me. This is horrible. Like, no, no joke. I'll tell you the story about him. So we get to the first tee. We haven't really talked. And I get up on the first tee.
But are you the kind of guy that gets a little starstruck around like a hero like that, like an athletic hero?
I would say I did.
Okay.
Yes. So you're about at this to meet time him. I did. Okay. And also because I was not as comfortable with my game. I mean, now I'm not saying I'm great, but I know what I am, yeah. And I'm really comfortable with that. Yeah. I know that there are a lot of guys who are going to beat me like a drum, score-wise, straight up, whatever. Yeah. So I get up on the first tee. Lawrence Taylor is my partner. We've kind of not exchanged. He has a huge cigar in. And I tee off. We're partners, right? So it's a two-man scramble. Okay. I hit mine so far left. I mean, so far left, like out of bounds, doesn't even. It is gone. It is hooked, gone. And I nervously look up, and he is acting like he did not watch my shot and is just kind of turned the other way. And he gets up. And he hits it in the fairway bunker. And he turns to me and he goes, "Where'd you hit yours?" And I was like, "Oh, it's left, bad. No, we'll play yours." Like, okay. So we get out to the fairway. So we have to play out of the fairway bunker. And I'm like, God, he hates me. This is so terrible. We get there and I'm in the fairway bunker. And I swear my legs are shaking. I'm so nervous about this because I know I'm going to thin it into the lip of the bunker. It's going to come back and the entire day is going to be over. I pure it, hit it from the fairway bunker onto the green to, I don't know, 15, 20. I remember it still today. This has to have been 12, 14 years ago. And I get out of the bunker and he goes, "My partner." He puts his big arm with a cigar around my shoulder and I'm like, "I'm in." Right. Yes. This is so great. MJ is interesting. I mean, to me, he's the greatest athlete that has ever lived in any sport. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And part of it is you can't separate celebrity from athlete too. And he's just so iconic. I mean, you talk at times like, who is it? You know, now, today, maybe Barack Obama, right? Maybe okay. Woods, Jordan. I mean, like in terms of like global stars in a way. Because you go like Bieber, no, who else compares? Because when he walks into a room, everybody knows, it's that. So he does this thing where when you're teeing off, right, and you're, so you've got the tee markers, especially if there's any ones with height, he will stand in your line of sight and put his leg up on the tee marker. And so that you, as you're teeing off, if you look up, he's standing right there. And he's definitely doing it on purpose. Oh, no. For sure. Just very casually smoking a cigar or whatever. So I'm, again, first time I played with him, I think we'd been through about 10 holes. I'm still really nervous. And I'm in a greenside bunker again. And so it's like 6 feet tall. And then there's him standing. So as I'm there, and again, he's standing right in my line of sight. He's up like 12 feet, And I take a big swing, and my club goes right under the ball, and it just goes boop, up and down. And the first thing I do is just shoot up, and because I know he's standing right there, and I shoot up like, what is he going to do? And he laughs, like a belly laugh, puts his arm on his knee, and he goes, "It's all right, B, we've all done it." And I was like, okay, we've all done it. Right. I've done it. Me and Mike, we've both done it. This is great. Yeah, we've done the same thing. That's fine. I'm good. So, yeah.
That is the crazy thing about golf, if you really think about it. Like, I mean, we there's been like a recent social media obsession with like, pros hitting shanks.
Yes.
There is a really crazy like emotional experience for every amateur out there when they see great people make huge mistakes like us.
100%. I mean, because it happens, right? I mean, there's so many factors, so much timing, everything. When you watch players, even, guys on the web tour, and you watch them over the course of a round, I mean, they're so much better. I mean, they're so mentally, physically, like their swing, they're so much better than the average person. But sure, you can, I had played Torrey. This was last year, I think. Right before, I'd played Torrey Pines, par three, really hard course. Par three, I hit a great shot in to about 2 feet and had birdie. And then I came back during the tournament, and I'm seeing guys hit it in the bunker right and left. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I stuck it here. You can't, you know, like, yeah, you have that feeling.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, too, that, like, I mean, you know, these are things that have obviously been said before. But the idea that, you know, guys like MJ, guys like LT, Curry, they come to golf. They love it.
Yes.
And it's almost like, do they enjoy what is it that they really get out of it? You know what I mean? Is it that they're not great at it? Is it that it's like a puzzle? Is it that they can, is it just a feeling of a good shot? Like that one, you know, you talk about that one out of the bunker. Like I can know just from you telling me how that felt for you. Cause
right.
Everybody's had one of those.
Right. Right. Well, that, yeah. I mean, that's the old thing, right? That's what brings you back. You know, you play terrible and you know, you make a two good shots on 18 and birdie. Like you're okay. Well, this is good. I can do this.
What's a better hole for you, 1 or 18?
If there's something on the line, I'll take myself on 18.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not every time. Obviously, I can. You know, we were talking about at Wilshire. I've hit it in that water a bunch of times.
That 18 hole is a doozy.
I will say I don't warm up a lot.
Okay. That's kind of country club vibe, right? It's like I play all the time. I'm just going to go play. I'm just looking for a game.
And I would say that a lot of times, having not warmed up, I will start hot, actually. So that's Like it's like, oh, that's easy. Like, whoa, I'm just, you know, you're swinging easy. You're not, you know, there's no, you know, there's no extra... Hank Haney told me one time, I still use it as a reminder at times that what you're trying to do with the club is swing fast, but not hard. And I feel like that is a problem for me. Your eyes are up. I don't know if that makes sense.
Or no, I'm blown away.
Oh,
yeah.
Because, and there is a difference when you're trying to muscle it through. Like I'm gonna really hit this one hard, and it's tight and it's work, and it's not loose as opposed to fat. Like you want club head speed.
Right.
You want to create club head speed, but that's different than swinging hard.
Whoa, dude, I'm going to use that swing tip for the next 9 months.
No, I'm telling you. I still use it, and he probably told me that 5 years ago or something.
How interesting is that? That you heard something 5 years ago, and you're still... It's like Mr. Miyagi.
Yes.
Like you're still waxing on and off.
Oh, yes. I think he's the best. He there's a lot of things that he talks about that... I don't remember them a lot, but he has his... I'm sure you've read it. His things about... decreasing your score. I'm not being articulate about it, but it's like simple, very simple things like one shot out of a bunker, eliminate penalty shots.
Okay.
Two putts, you know, getting up and, you know, not creating the extra mistake,
right,
essentially. Right. And it's amazing if you focus on that. Like you make a bad, everyone's going to make a bad swing and put yourself in a bad situation. Don't exacerbate that by making another mistake.
Right.
By creating another bad situation or a worse situation. And it's, I mean, that's helped me to bring it, you know,
but see,
south of 10.
For me, that's actually a hard one because when I've made a mistake, I want to fix that. I have a hard time accepting the mistake. And
totally.
And so I'm like, I'm going to get out of this and conquer.
Yes.
And then I end up just really getting hammered.
Yes. Yes. Well, that, yes. Well, that is, but see, I think that's a difference that people don't realize enough is the difference between match play and stroke play. I think it's a totally different game because I think match play at times forces you to do that.
Right.
To try to hit the miraculous low percentage shot to keep you in that particular hole.
Right.
Whereas, as opposed to sort of managing your game, managing the course, not, you know, when I honestly, I feel like not always in a tournament type situation, but when I am trying to just when I'm playing and trying to minimize doubles, if you're really focused on that as opposed to I gotta make par here, right? As opposed to sort of accepting that you hit a crappy shot and you're gonna make bogey, you know, like yeah.
You score better.
Totally.
It's almost like I'm beginning to realize now, maybe I was just like genetically predisposed to like match play.
Yeah.
Like I was just like triples and birdies.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Well, yes. Well, that's, yeah. I think that's why at the very beginning of our conversation, I was talking about playing. I feel like that. I feel like I'm way better at that. And like my numbers will be big on a hole or two or whatever. My number is legitimate. I'm going to go out and I'm going to shoot anywhere right around 81.
Okay. Yeah, 81 for me is like, 79 is like, totally. That was a good day.
Like 100%.
83, I'm like, what am I even doing here?
Exactly. And it's just two shots. No, I know. And the last time I played, I shot 79, which I don't see sevens. I'm always want to be in the sevens.
Right.
I want a seven. And the last time I shot 79, how did I shoot 79? On the very last hole I played, I chipped in from 80 feet for birdie, right? So you figure that the chances of that are zero. So we're at least in 80, and yeah. Probably the chip requires two putts, and it's an 81. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
But instead, I chip and I'm like, I had a great day. 79. Did you see that score?
You're married.
Yes.
Does she play golf? Does your wife play golf? Do you tell her about your golf game?
Oh. I relive every moment.
Does she? And
with
she
anyone who will listen, by the way. Anyone. I just told you about the last hole.
You should do a podcast where you just recount the round.
The entire
just
round?
Like, just like Brian's all Monday. Right.
So on hole one, I hit it a little left. I was kind of bummed out. But then I hit this 3-wood. Oh, my God. It was so good. Yeah. I don't know. No one's interested.
I could laugh for a long time with that.
No, it's not a terrible idea. Actually, I'm liking it. It would, yeah. No,
we'll look into it. Okay. It'd be funny to also have a video of you doing it without any sound. just like, because have you seen the ones where it's like they do Rory's swings?
Yes.
From a tournament, like all 69.
Oh, just all. Yeah.
It's just like driver, boom. Like you know what I mean? Like iron, boom. Two putts, boom. And it's just like how long does the video? No one's. Yeah, Stu, how long this video is? Like a minute, right? When Rory's like, they have every shot from Rory's first round of the Dubai match.
Rory's 63 in under 2 minutes.
Yeah, in under 2 minutes.
Under 2 minutes.
We should do that with you, except we do like an hour.
Yeah, but see, yeah, exactly. But I, you would have to leave at least like 2 seconds because every shot would either be yes, yes, or fuck, God. Jesus, what is wrong with you?
Have you ever broken a club?
No.
Good for
no,
you.
I don't throw. No, I don't throw. I do talk. I do talk, and I defend myself talking, and I don't like it when the pros talk. I'm not into that. No, because here's the thing. It's very simple. I am not good enough to not celebrate when I do something incredible.
Right.
I should be happy.
Yeah.
Right? If I hit in a big one, yeah, you got, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
My friends and anyone listening who has played in tournaments that I'm in, I mean, they call it the Vern Lundquist. You will get a yes, sir, from all the way in my gullet. Like when that chip from 80 feet, yes, sir. I will just roar it, and I get aggravated. But I don't get again. I don't throw clubs and stuff like that.
Right.
I'll get pissed just at myself. And again, 5 seconds later, it's over.
So you don't. You don't turn into like a sulky golfer during a pro am if you're
No.
I heard a story about Bill Murray where he wasn't playing well, and the partners during the pro am didn't know him. You know, were a little uncomfortable, and he sort of looks at them and he goes, "I know I'm not being the guy you expected," and. Here's what I'll do. If I hit a good shot right here, I have the ball in front of me. If I hit a good shot, I'll be funny for the rest of the round. And if I hit a bad shot, I'm not going to say another word. And then he hit a bad shot and just didn't say anything. And I don't know. You know, obviously it's hard to verify all these sort of Bill Murray-isms, but I don't know. I mean, it's cool to hear that you don't really take it that seriously.
No. I can't. I'm not good enough.
Right.
Well, I mean, I can be frustrated with myself, but again, usually it's momentary. Right. And I definitely don't carry it forward. So I don't like playing with sulky golfers, though. It makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I have some friends who are. I really do.
Stuff. You got to call them out. You got to show them the light side, the bright side.
I try, but with some guys.
Yeah.
I mean, especially like, you know, again, like professional athletes, they're used to excelling at every. And in golf, you just can't.
No.
You can't.
So you're 20 when you try golf, or what's your experience with golf? What is your view of golf before you played it? When you know, up until becoming a 20-year-old starting to play golf?
I did not have any. It's super weird. I was not a part of the we were members of a country club in Atlanta, Georgia.
Where?
A fantastic golf course. It was called Cherokee.
Okay.
Cherokee Town and Country Club. Okay. So there was like two locations. And maybe that's part of it. The golf course is at one, and they had this town club.
Is this the one where the putting green goes into the tee box? I think I'm thinking.
I don't know because I never played.
Ah.
Like I never played. We were a tennis family. I played tennis. I played tennis in high school. And we just never played golf.
Hmm.
And it was, for me, it was, I was probably, before I ever played, I was probably 23. I graduated from college and I was doing theater. And for me, I was active and love sports, and I was stuck in like a dark room all day long at night, and I needed something to get out, and somebody asked me to play, and then I just became obsessed, like
immediately.
Crazy. Pretty cool. Yeah. I've never had a lesson.
Ever?
No, but it's kind of cheating because, right, so I've, you know, done some, you know, things like this for NBC Sports, and I got introduced to Hank Haney. So, like, Hank Haney has come to a range, or I have worked with him, mostly in front of the camera, filmed. So, yeah, I mean, I guess those are lessons-ish, but, you know, I've never had a lesson, ever.
You've never had a lesson, but you've had some seriously high-intensity swing tips.
Yes. Yes.
Some very high-quality swing tips.
High-quality swing tips. Yes, but no, I never have.
HQST. I mean, it's a thing nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, all the kids are doing it.
All the kids. HQST.
So we're going to. All right, while you guys get on your HQST, we're going to take a quick break. All right. All right, folks. You know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. And so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously, and they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. There are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. All right, light it. We're back. That was a great break. Brian, so you're in college, you get out of college, you start playing golf, and at what point are you like, I want to be very, very, very successful at being a funny person?
I did theater, and mostly not comedies,
right,
at all. a lot of dramas, and but I did theater, and I just, the idea of moving to New York or LA, you know, like right out of college or like doing that, it was just not me.
Interesting.
It was, yeah, it was just not that I, you know, like starving artist thing, I guess, that like pounding the pavement thing. Now, I mean, I did theater and I did small theater in times and in a lot of very weird locations and places.
All in Atlanta.
But I was all, no, okay. It was all around. No, I was in Minneapolis and Chicago and Dallas and New York and San Francisco. And
driving? Station wagon? Sleeping in the car?
No, I was luckily doing larger theaters than that most of the time. Double trees.
Mitch Hedberg?
I did that and I finally decided I was sort of ready. You know, had my SAG card because I had done this little, you know, movie, and I had, you know, my Equity card, which now is so long since expired. They probably would never let me back in again now. And moved to LA, and then I got just incredibly lucky. About 3 months after I moved to Los Angeles, I met the people who were doing this new show, The Office. And so once I was in LA, that happened pretty quickly.
That's insane. And how old are you at that time?
Math is
it's a great
not
tool.
My not my strongest
math
suit.
Is a great mindset.
Hold on. I was
I could do the math.
I was basically 31.
And now when you like meet people in the world, if someone doesn't like The Office, I actually have a hard time getting along with them. Have you found this?
Me too.
Do you know what I mean though?
Oh no, for sure. Oh no, for sure, for sure. No, there is a judgmental part of me. I'll tell you very exactly. This is where it comes from. I remember when the show was sort of at its height, and of course, my parents are incredibly loving, supportive people, and of course, they wanted their friends to like it. And I would hear from my parents, they were like, "Yeah, our friends just." They just can't. It's just too mean. It's too mean. And that Steve Carell is just so awful. I would hear things like that. And at the time, right, like, so that was what they call in the demographic, we were very, very popular. There was an overall viewership, a show that was way more popular in terms of numbers. This show called CSI. Now, CSI opens with a naked, murdered girl in like 95% of the episodes.
Yeah.
And so my question to them sort of became like, oh, do they watch CSI? Oh, yeah, they love. And I'm like, oh, okay. So a naked murdered girl laying in the sand with decomposing, naked, by the way, is totally fine. Yeah. But like Steve...
Yeah.
Getting a little uncomfortable about race or homosexuality or like, you know, someone's body shape or size, like that is too much. Yeah. So yes, of course I would. So I was like, yeah, see, that's the, you know, that's the mindset. It's subversive. The show is subversive.
It really is.
Yes. It's subversive. And that's why it is, we recently got together, all of us who work on the show, and we had a brunch, and we were talking about it, and it is not, it's close, but I mean, all of us said the show is bigger now.
Oh yeah,
than it was at the height of the show.
I would agree,
and it's because it's subversive, so it appeals to that younger demographic, that 20-year-old, 18, 16, 12, I mean, like, younger. So the people, you know, some people who were watched it when it came out, they're still watching it or watching it now with their kids or, you know, whatever. But it just keeps repopulating because of the young people. And, you know, it's, I don't think it's a secret. It is verifiably the number one show on Netflix right now, which is the number one thing in the world. And by the way, it's not close. I don't know really how much I'm supposed
awesome.
To say, but yes.
That's awesome, dude.
It's crazy.
At what point are you like do you try to look back on it all? And do you ever think like, I mean, maybe this is the wrong way to ask the question, but I guess I'm wondering like when you look at what you did on the show, right? How many years is it?
It was 10 years, 9 seasons.
10. Right. When you look at those 10 years, do you ever like just have these moments where you're like, oh, where you can see very clearly what you learned?
100%.
Like what? 100%. What do you get out of that? Like, because it's not just obviously you run a show, that's great, but what did you get out of it as a craft maker?
Well, you know, in terms of how the show was constructed, to me, now, I don't know really how much. I mean, some people when I say this say that they can see this, but the way the show was constructed and built that made it an absolute pain in the ass. Just, I mean, just the work, like. On a base schedule time level, it was the worst possible show that you could be on, right? And I'll explain. So you take CSI or, you know, one of those shows, you've got, you know, you've got the lead who is in every scene. And then you've got people who come in, come out, you know, and people are working 2-3 days a week. I always talk about Modern Family, right? Modern right. Family, you think about it as being sort of the same as The Office. They're there like 2 or 3 days a week, right? Because you've got, you know, the scenes with Julie Bowen, and then you've got the scenes with Eric Stone Street, and then you've got the scenes, you know, with Sofia Vergara. And then maybe they all come together, you know, for a big scene at the end of the episode. We were all there all the time.
Right.
In a confined space because the camera was moving around and it was built as a practical. There was no, like, wall that didn't exist. So we're all there locked in and the camera swinging around. So we were all there. I'm not complaining, by the way. I'm just telling you, we were there. I'm answering your question, actually. So why am I apologizing? 60 to 70 hours a week.
Well, that's so, a lot of hours. That's a lot of hours.
Yeah. And that's one episode, right? So it's like, you know, I would say like, you know, shooting like 12 to 14 hours a day for 5 days for, you know, for a half hour. Of television.
Whoa.
But because of that, it became this sort of glorious, you know, chili pot of, that just popped into my head. You know, because you had, now I'm going to carry forward, like all of these ingredients, right? And you had people who were, say, you know, like Kate Flannery and Steve Carell. I'm going to miss people, but I'm going to just sort of give you the idea, right? They were really improv people, Angela Kinsey, improv people. And then you had, you know, stand-up comedians. You had BJ Novak and Craig Robinson and people sort of from stand-up. And then you had, you know, like Rainn Wilson and myself who were sort of from straight theater. And sort of all of those experiences brought different things. And the fact that everyone was sort of coming in a way from a different, you know, looking at the comedy from sort of a different place, teaching each other, you know, how to do certain things or how you, you know, would approach a certain thing, and added so much to that pot. And the fact that we were all locked in there together. So there was nothing else for us to do except to try to make each other laugh, right?
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, that's what everybody was, you know, the big conference room scenes with Steve, all Steve was trying to do was to make us laugh or so break, good. You know? And so we, you know, and then time, right? So then, you know where you can set somebody up for a joke that you now know that they can deliver. And,
right.
And that and the other thing specifically about, you know, the show there or that was different is the whole camera being a character as well.
Totally.
So responding to that as if that was another person that you could play off as well. Just, you know, again, just sort of teaching something new, learning something anew, you know, like, oh. That's something we can do. Like, right. We can do that. I remember the one scene we talked about it all the time. We had this huge, big guy who was a camera assistant guy. And I think it was our, we had the post Super Bowl slot one year when NBC had the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And The Office was on after that.
Whoa.
So they wanted something big. And we did this, it was the, this fire sequence. Dwight decides he's going to light a fire, and we all have to, we all smell the smoke, but he's locked us in, and we don't know what we're doing. And we took a bunch of time rehearsing that, and we had this thing where the camera guy is filming us, and we're running, and you can still see it on the, I mean, they kept it in, but again, like making it a character, you see me running full steam at him, and I just, boom, elbowed him down, and he falls. And this huge camera assistant guy who's kind of like holding the cameraman is this big, strong guy, reaches down, picks him up, like grabs his shoulders, picks him up, and he keeps running and filming with the thing too. But again, it was not like, oh, I made a mistake, and that the camera's like, no, he's there. Yeah. The camera is there.
The audience knows he's in the show.
Move the F out of my way.
Yeah.
So
that's a really unusual setup that you guys were able to work with.
Yes.
I think people, and I think one of the reasons why it's probably more successful now is we, as all viewers and consumers of media, have gotten smarter. And now we know that when someone takes a photo on a beach, someone took that photo.
Yes.
And we start thinking about that.
Yes.
And now there's even jokes, like there's memes about that.
Smart,
you know,
actually,
like,
yes.
And so now it's like The Office just already glues into that.
Yes.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? It's like there's a weird thing with, you know, people, you know, on Instagram and stuff, where they're, I'm not talking, I started, and I know people are going to think I'm talking about like sexy pictures, but like there's certain pictures that you see where there's a, yeah, it's almost like someone is pretending that they're alone.
Yeah.
But they're clearly not alone.
Yeah. It's like, it would be like a guy.
That's a very interesting thing.
It would be a picture of a well-dressed guy in a coffee shop looking at his phone, but also looking out the window.
Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah. And it's like, and the comment, yes. The joke to make fun of them is take a pic of me looking out the window. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I think about it all the time because a lot of our business takes place, you know, in the realm of Instagram. And when I mean business, I mean, you know, connecting with golfers that are like, you know, want to be involved in what we do, is traveling or whatever.
Right.
And so we do, like, you know, we make fun of that as well, obviously. Yeah. So on the just a little bit more about, you know, this wonderful, like, you know, collaborative experience you took part in. I'm curious to know if, you know, when I think of comedy, right, I'm fascinated by it. And I know that, I guess I kind of want to just talk about, like, how a couple different things that I'm thinking about. One is, I've met people who are not necessarily intelligent, right, but they are hilarious. And I'm curious to know, how do you define the intelligence of comedy? Like, because I believe on some level you have to be really, really, really smart to be funny.
Yes.
But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What does it take to be funny?
Well, I mean, I can't answer that question, but I do know that I think that you can be funny unintentionally.
That's funny.
And be you can be funny unintentionally and not be very smart, but I think that, I mean, look, I mean, I don't know if this exactly relates, but, you know, I played a character for a long time that was not very smart. I feel like I am at least smarter than he was. I'll put it that way. I'm not going to claim I'm a genius. But I think that you, in order to, I think it was potentially one of the harder roles to play because you do have to understand. I'm trying to be accurate. I'm not trying to like think of the right answer. I think you have to understand the construction of why something is funny and then be able to deliver it with no memory of the construction. Does that make sense?
Well, so, I was going to ask you about that. Like how do, like a scripted joke, how do you make that funny? Because you already know the punchline. You already know what's happening.
Well, that's where I would say that being a trained actor is important, right? So, like, you know, I went to school to learn, because this was interesting to me, and to learn, and took like a graduate level course that was called comedy, right? By this professor who was not funny at all.
Really?
Nothing funny about him. But I mean, going back like over history and really discussing and dissecting why these great works of theater, literature, were, you know, and I'm talking about Molière and Shakespeare. We're going deep here for a golf podcast, but why they were funny and what they were doing that was new and different, right? So if you take that to our show, I think that you, by changing the rules, which you're saying now people are more used to, but by changing the rules and saying there's a person who is filming us and finding the reason that that exists, which to me, again, is important, right? So I'm not gonna dismiss Modern Family. I think that it's a hilarious show. But the construction behind why there's a camera crew there makes no sense.
Right.
They're interviewed at times, and then at times there is no acknowledgement that there's a camera there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And if there is a camera there, why is it following them?
Have you asked them?
No. They don't care what they're very successful. I don't know
fine.
If you've heard.
They're doing fine.
They're very fine. But my point about that is that they found something that was funny. And the idea to talk to a camera either through The Office or, you know, any of the other shows that, you know, Larry Sanders Show or whatever that used it at least somewhat. And used that as a joke, because that in and of itself was a joke. We found the construction behind it, which was like, okay. Flimsy. Don't get me wrong. There's a documentary crew following a paper company
for 10 years.
For 10 years. Yes. And but what does that mean? And then where does the camera crew have to hide? And you find, you know, some of the, to me, my favorite moments throughout the history of the show, and I'm talking like hours. Production stops, hours of conversation, like, well, where is the camera? Where's the camera? And who? So like Jim and Pam's first kiss that happens in an office. Would they kiss if the camera was there?
Of course not.
No. So how is the camera there, hidden? Fine. And so, are those slats too wide so we can't see the kiss, but we need to make sure that the audience knows that it's hidden behind here so that that is a secret that they believe still is between the two of them and that no one else is included in. I'm going way off topic here. But
dude, that's why the show is getting more and more popular now, is because people are getting smarter as viewers and they still believe it.
Yes, because it's true. Because whether you like the decision or not, there was always a decision made. So I directed this episode, and it was very complicated because the episode, I'm not going to remember the name of the one I'm talking about, but that took some of the office workers have gone to Florida. They're in a hotel room, and there's this whole thing between a new worker there and Jenna. Pam is back at the office, and there's this thing with Jim, this like pseudo sexual thing happening that's happening in a hotel room. Now, there were two windows in this hotel room to film this from the outside of this hotel room. And it was very difficult to find the proper camera angles from the window to film the action that was happening in or around the bed. But we couldn't bring the cameras inside.
No.
Because if the cameras are inside and Jim sees that the cameras are inside, then Jim would say, goodbye, I'm out, right? So he has to believe that he's alone. So like finding excuses for the, you know, Dwight comes in at one point and we go, oh, well, when Dwight comes in, then the camera can come in behind him because now Dwight's not alone and now the camera's going to be inside. But everything was a decision that was made. And then going back to the comedy discussion that you're happening, the ability to give that look that, you know, somebody says something that isn't funny. Someone tells a joke that isn't funny. That's racist, that's homophobic, that's whatever. You don't laugh at that. But what you laugh at is Jim or me or whoever suddenly looking at the camera saying, did you just hear that?
Right.
So that sort of level of comedy that you know, I had an old director that called it off the beat. The comedy doesn't exist on the beat. It's always off the beat.
Interesting.
Yes. Now, that theory is sort of flimsy when you do the ba-dum-bum-ching, because then there is a rhythm there. But most of the time, true comedy, and certainly the Office comedy, exists off of the beat, off of what you expect. The funnier laugh, you might laugh at what somebody says, but the funnier laugh is always in somebody's response to what that thing was.
That's so interesting. You know, I not to make this about me, but if we were having a normal conversation, I would say this, so I'll say it anyway because we're on
Please.
My fucking podcast.
Yes.
You know, I came to hosting without knowing anything.
Right.
I was a filmmaker, and they were like, "Do you want to host a show?" And I was like, "Sure." And got into interviewing people and going into these weird scenarios. I don't know if you saw Adventures in Golf.
Yeah.
We go into the wild places. And I was told by a person, a mentor of mine whom I truly respect, another host, and he said to me something like, dude, your ability to hear something crazy and not make fun of them, but also let the audience know that it is crazy to you
yes.
as well, that is the gold. And I was like, it just sort of happened, and I don't know why. And I guess what I'm trying to understand from you is that's a really interesting insight. And I guess what I'm looking at is like, for me, because comedy isn't scripted, right? For me, I'm just going out there and I'm just playing golf with people, and I don't even understand a lot of it. And I guess as I work on this podcast now for a while, the greatest thing for me is to learn from people who know a lot.
I don't know about that. What you're saying, I think, is a huge gift that you have, but I don't know that I've tried to sort of deconstruct in quite that way what is funny. I don't know that I have any more answers than you do, but I do think you have to be smart, because I do think that the funniest is when you understand the construction of the joke and then can deliver with no memory of the construction that you've done.
Right.
That I know. I do. I believe that.
So let's see. What do people not know about Brian?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I feel like everybody knows everything now.
Do you really?
Do
you just live in public? Is it?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Hey,
I don't complain. Oh, yeah.
Thumbs up, right? I mean, what do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't know
that's
Brian.
That's what I mean. No. But I do. I mean, I know a lot of times they'll spot me and use their phone to get my name. I get a lot of Brian's now.
Do you wish they just said Kevin at that point?
just
take it easy.
No. I had a long conversation with somebody recently about the, like, because if you spend any amount of time with me, there becomes a certain way of approaching that is great,
right?
And some that is just awful,
awkward.
Oh, just
it's like you're in the office again.
Well, here's the one I was discussing. Here's my favorite, least favorite is, hey, no, approach. We're sitting somewhere at a bar having a cocktail or having lunch, and someone comes up and interrupts and says, hey, did anyone ever tell you you look like the guy from The Office? There's no real answer to that. Yes, I've heard that. No, I've never heard that. I mean, that would be a lie, but...
yeah.
But there's some weird, like...
That is a weird question.
It's a weird... And it's a lot, man. I mean, I'm telling you, a lot.
Really?
Did anyone ever tell you you look like Kevin from The Office? Yes.
Do you think they're saying that... Do you think what they're trying to say is I'm too afraid to ask you if you are?
Yes. Because I finally called somebody out.
You did?
Very recently. And I said, well, their question... They started like this. They started like this. Hey... can I ask you a question?
Oh, geez.
And I said, sure, but make sure that you really need to ask me the question that you're going to ask me.
That's good. You knew exactly
and
what was coming.
And they stopped and said, what are you drinking there? It looks good.
No.
And I said, yes, I did. And then I laughed. And then I laughed. I laughed really hard because I thought that was clever. Yeah. And then I turned around. And then I tried to get out of him. I was like, so what is that? And I think I mean, you live in LA. You have fancy, dancy friends. And, you know, so there's becomes like a familiarity, I think, with some people. I mean, a lot is traveling and or, you know, down south. L.A., it's obviously it just happens less, I think, because people are more,
yeah,
you know, just more accustomed to seeing people. But I think for me specific, well, there's two things for me specific. I don't go anywhere without wearing a hat. I'm not wearing a hat right now. It's sitting right there, but I don't go anywhere without wearing a hat.
We're indoors.
Yeah.
It's an incognito thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just trying to, but the problem with me is I look distinctive and rain. I think the two of us,
right.
there's not a whole lot we can do.
Yeah.
But I think what it is that people, because I hear this all the time, that they go to bed watching the Office. I hear that all the time.
Yeah, I guess I
so
have.
I think it's like they're in their underwear, right? They're in their bed clothes. They're in bed, maybe with someone else,
right?
And they're watching me,
right,
on television night after night. And so in a way, I am in bed with them.
Yeah.
Like there becomes an intimacy and there's a, I know him.
Yeah.
And so that makes me approachable as opposed to, and I don't know why I always give this example because whatever, but I don't know if it's relevant anymore, but like Tom Cruise.
Sure.
Tom Cruise is not. Tom Cruise is 90 feet tall on a screen in, you know, in a movie theater where you're out and you're not in your house, in your underwear, in your bed watching.
Yeah.
So I think that there's like an unapproachability thing about that.
Yeah.
Whereas television, our specific kind of show and television, there becomes like an intimacy, like people know me.
Well, also you're in your show, it's casually shot and you're playing a normal person.
Yes.
You have a normal job.
Yes.
And
yes.
What was your salary, do you know, on The Office? Like how much did Kevin make?
I don't know.
I'm curious. There must be a number there somewhere.
Probably. Like I don't remember.
28 grand, maybe 32.
Maybe.
But you know, so but really though, what do people not know about Brian? Like what are people surprised when they do find out about you? And it can't be golf. It's something.
Okay. I'll skip by that one fast. They don't know that I'm an athlete. That's unexpected. I would say the biggest thing that people don't know about me is the most obvious first encounter thing, which is that I don't talk the way that they expect me to talk.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And I will see someone's eyes glaze over as I'm talking and go, they're not listening at all. They're thinking, right. I'm thinking, they're like, they are, all they're thinking is how he's talking. Totally not how I think that he's talking. They're very confused.
Dude,
yes.
That's gotta be psycho.
Yeah. If I'm in a meeting, if I have a meeting, that's become a joke of mine is that I'll start the meeting. I'll go like, you know, especially if I'm talking a lot, like a minute and a half. And then I'll be like, all right, we're going to start over. Okay, so now you guys are aware that I don't talk. This is how I talk. So you quit. And they, like 100% of the time, everybody laughs because they're clearly just thinking, but they're not hearing what I'm saying. So it's like, all right, let's back up.
Yeah,
you know, I sort of build it in as a joke now because it's
so funny because we met a couple weeks ago at PXG. We were at Bob's HQ over there, and we just met briefly. Like it was like a hi, how are you? And then, but it was funny because sitting here down to talk, and I was like, okay, all right. He's not like this on the show.
No, I know.
What character is he playing now? Who is this guy? No, but I mean, that's got to be psycho in some ways. Like, because they're literally, because I mean, for me, I just do myself.
Yes.
Hey,
I do too now.
Now.
Well, yeah, now. Sure. Yeah. But again, part of that going back is just about, that's what I knew. Like, I came from theater. Right. I didn't do, you know, I mean, this is a terrible example, but like, you know, John Krasinski is not any different really than Jim.
Exactly.
Like that's who he is. And I was like, oh, I saw the character description. And I was like, oh, we need to build this. This is going to build this character. And I had movement training. So it's about the way that I stood, the way that my jaw is, the way, like it was all about. The character description was the only thing remarkable about Kevin is that he is remarkably unremarkable. That was it.
Yeah.
And so I went, okay, well, like, what is that? What does that look like?
Whoa.
What is that? Like, how is that? How is that in terms of the way that he moves, the way that he, yeah.
That's a feat, dude. You fooled the world for 10 years. You really did. And so what, you and Rain probably are the most affected characters on the show.
I mean, he is super weird, Rain.
In real life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's super weird. But yeah, no, it's definitely, there's something there. I mean, he's so great.
Yeah, he's good. What inspires you?
What inspires, what I love, like when I feel something deep inside has to do with the combination of, and it's not even like I'm a super religious person. So it's not that, but it's so when I say God here, I mean it more generally, but it's God's creation matched with man's creation. So that's why to me, and I'm not intentionally bringing it back about golf, but maybe that's what's in my head about what inspires me. What I love and what I get a visceral, positive, almost spiritual feeling when I am somewhere on a place in this earth that is geographically beautiful and man has come in and done something there that to me makes it even better. I love that. I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think we should go play golf.
All right.
Let's go play. Is there anything else you want to add? Any questions for me? That's a throwaway line at the end usually.
Really?
I offer that. Yeah, just questions for me. Like it's like, what a silly interviewer to ask if you have any questions for me. Like,
who is the most interesting person that you have ever interviewed?
In my life?
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's going to be one of the two interviews, the first two interviews I ever did in golf. And it would be, they're both available to be watched actually, but one guy was a golfer who, wouldn't fit under anybody's stereotype of a golfer. And, you know, and the other was a driving range attendant who had quote never played, but they both had swings and they just loved the game of golf and in a very uncanny way, understood the game of golf, spoke freely about it. Had no media training. They were literally, one was a local 600 and, you know, worked on films.
Yeah.
You know? And the other was a driving range attendant. And those, they were, you, it would be your life's work to recreate them. Do you know what I mean? Like you would be, you
awesome.
You would look at them and you would be like, wow, you can't do that better than they did it.
Okay.
Character,
I love that.
Speech, language, embodiment, and you know, I think about them, and I just it makes me almost like sad that I haven't seen them in years or whatever. You know,
right?
I feel like that's the documentarian answer. You know what I mean? Sure, there are other people. I mean, geez, that's a tough question. You know, John O'Hurley was actually a really good interview on this podcast.
Really?
Yeah, he's wild. Have you hung out with him?
I know John. Yeah,
he's out there, man. He is. Yeah. He's on a different planet.
Yeah,
and I was not ready for it. I was ready for whatever I could conceive of Mr. Peterman.
Right.
Right? The story of his engagement at Pebble Beach was fascinating. I don't know if you heard this story.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Wow.
That was out there.
All right.
Writers are usually very good, right? Because they can edit.
Right.
Themselves.
Self-edit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I should be better at that.
No, not at all. What are you talking about? You're great. There's two types of bad podcast interviews. Ones where they don't talk and ones where they don't stop talking.
Right.
It's in between.
Right. Interesting.
I'm gonna go listen
to those.
Into the art. Oh, the John O'Hurley one's sick.
No, I'm talking about the other ones.
The Mike Mega and Tim. I don't know his last name.
Mike Mega and Tim.
Yeah, I'll send you the links. They're on YouTube. I'll send them to you.
Perfect.
So, all right, well, we'll put your link to your Instagram. You're very active on Instagram. What do you do more,
God,
Twitter
no,
or Instagram?
I'm terrible.
What do you do more
no,
of?
I'm terrible. Are you good at it? Are you good at it?
I enjoy it, so I think I'm good at it.
Okay.
I really enjoy it.
Good for you.
I like.
I can't. Oh, I don't.
Why don't you like it?
I love people.
You want me to manage your Instagram?
Oh my God, you'd be no. But I can't do it. I'm protective of it.
What do you mean? What do you mean you're protective of your privacy?
No. Yes. But also, I can't let anyone run it because I feel like I have a unique voice.
Well,
whether
it's personal,
good or bad, it's mine, and I feel like it. I hate inauthenticity. Is that a word?
Yes.
I hate not being authentic. So even as I have to post things that are not 100% like, not that they're not authentic, but not necessarily fun or funny, I still want to try to find something in my voice about that. Yeah. No, I
agree.
Posted like 350 times. I see people and they posted thousands.
I'm like above 1,000.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've now realized I have multiple buckets of things to post, right?
Right.
One is like a swing video. The other is like a supercut of a video that we just posted on YouTube of our travels.
Yeah, that's good.
The other is like a sick photo of us playing golf in a cool location with like a long comment about why we're alive and what we're going to do with our short life.
That's
I
good.
Really
that's
just
important.
I boiled that down into like a really sinister thing.
I know.
But that's what it is. I mean, you know, it's like I get it. Like to make it think that it doesn't matter to me is you read what I said wrong. You know, if you're listening and you're like, "Oh, whatever." It's everything in some sense is formulaic, just like filmmaking, but that doesn't mean it's not an art form. So, you know, we always look for, like you said, what's authentic in that moment, and sometimes there's nothing to say, and so then I just put it down.
Right. No, that's good. I like that. I like that. I am also really bad at, I don't do it naturally. I don't know if that's because even though I feel young, and I feel and appeal young. Oh, by the way, this is all just coming to me.
That's a recipe for someone who's going to jail.
I don't. Oh, my God. No, I did not intend that. The first thing I think of is not picking up my phone.
Right.
That truly may be an age
just
thing.
Generational.
Yeah.
I'm like solidly in between X and millennial.
Right.
I'm like millennial adjacent, I think is what they're called.
I don't know what I am. I'm way younger than you probably think.
You're X.
I am.
You're X.
But
how old are you?
I'm X.
What are you?
I'm definitely not going to tell you that. Fuck you. Are you kidding
me? I can
me?
Google it in like 8 seconds.
I know. But it might be wrong there.
Someone tell me how old Brian is. No one's in the room.
Yeah.
By the way, we're at the Bridges. This place is beautiful. If you're listening at home, we are in like a medieval chamber.
We are. Yes.
Check it out on YouTube.
if you disappoint me, you'll stay here.
No, we can. So we'll go play some golf.
Okay, let's do that.
And we're gonna play for something.
Yo, yeah.
Is it raining?
It's drizzling.
It's drizzling. Looks pretty wet. Should we just keep going? Should we just go for the 2-hour pod? You know, one of the longest podcasts I ever did was with someone you did a podcast with, Michael Collins.
Oh, really?
Love Michael Collins.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Mine was short with him.
Was it really?
Well, I think I was like teeing off and like we did it at the American Century.
Yeah, that was like it was. I thought it was like 30 minutes at least.
It might have been, but yeah.
Well, maybe it went by faster because he's more intelligent than me. He's had a long career of interviewing, comedy career.
Yes, yes.
He's one of my favorites on tour because he does what very few people do, and it's sad. He makes me feel welcome.
Really?
Yeah.
And people don't?
Golf industry can be a weird place.
Yes.
For someone like me who's coming in, I look different, I sound different, I'm going to talk about different things. Yeah, I mean, they're not like, oh, come on in. Here's your chair. They're kind of like, who are you? Who invited you? Are you sure you're in the right tent?
Right.
You know, whatever.
Interesting. So I was just at, yeah, I mean, I can relate. I will just relate to this story because it just happened last Friday. I went to Riviera, and I was there with some friends who were, I don't even know what this means, but like honorary tea walkers or
tea
something.
Sign bearer? No.
No, they just were, they got introduced. I'm not going to talk about who it was, but they got introduced. They're not famous people by looking at them. Husband and wife, they got introduced, and I was with them. And so I was, and it was raining, and I had my umbrella over her, his wife's head. And this guy comes over and is like, "Hey, Kevin, you come in here too." So we're walking with Rory, Tiger, and Justin Thomas. And suddenly I'm there on the tee box, full on the tee box, inside the ropes. And this guy lets me in. And they tee off, and everybody starts walking. Because these people, they're like honored. They're walking with them.
This is whole in competition. Ground.
In competition at Friday at Riviera.
This is crazy.
And they teed off on 10. And so I start walking with them.
No.
And Tiger's policeman, very nice guy, if you happen to be listening, he starts to, we're just chatting. He's like, "Oh my God, dude, we're such big fans. It's so great. Can I take, I take a picture with him?"
With the cop.
"This is the cop." Yes, he's got the gun. He's got the full uniform. He's there.
Yeah, three at Riviera. And that was a lot. That was yes. More than usual.
And he said, like, you know, "Oh yeah, we're just following a couple of the groups." And I'm talking to him. And then there is some officious guy, golf guy, who, I mean, I'm by the way, I'm not in the middle of things, and I'm not walking, you know, holding Tiger's hand. I'm by the rope doing what I, you know, I'm just walking with the cop.
Yeah.
Comes over and is like, "Are you the honorary walking person for this group?"
Walking person.
And I'm like, no, that guy just told me to come inside the ropes, and I'm, you know, I'm here, and I'm their friends. And the cop was like, "Oh, yeah, no, he's fine. He'll just be with me." And the guy's like, "If you're not, do you not have the honorary badge for the walking, you need to be outside the ropes, sir." I was like, "Okay, I was. I'm just doing, people were being nice, and now I'm being confronted by you. I just, you know, right. Like I had done something wrong. People invited me in. I'm talking to the cop. We're all good. Everyone's fine. I'm not going to, you know, say something bad."
Right.
Yeah, so,
you were,
I get
like
you.
Trying to get in there. Yeah.
No, I wasn't doing anything.
Right.
I was just there.
It is a weird spot. The golf is an unusual spectator sport.
It very. It's difficult.
It's tough.
It's very tough.
And there's volunteers everywhere who work 1 week a year. And the tough part on my end is you get a lanyard that's got all these letters on it.
Like you, I don't know what they mean.
There's so many letters.
Yes.
You get to know them over time. P is practice. C is clubhouse. M is media. And then there's others. And then there's like parking passes. And it's like each thing is its own like Mordor, you know, where you've got to like conquer.
Yes.
It's and you know, and just the volunteers are like, their main job is to make sure
that you have the thing.
Yeah. And they're willing to err on the side of, you know, they'd rather be wrong and keep you out.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Totally.
But at the same time, you're just like, I need to get over there. And they're like, you will not pass.
It's crazy.
It's tough.
I know. Well, see, what happens to me is exactly like that situation, is if I walk with purpose, I assume that I have the proper thing, right?
right.
So I will walk in and then be horrified that something is going to happen, like what happened on 10 Green at Riviera.
Maybe on TV.
Which is someone going like, "You need to get out of here."
Frank Nabilo is like, "Why is Kevin on the fairway?"
Oh.
I have heard a lot of it is just walking with purpose. You can get a lot of places. Did you hear about the guys that snuck into the Oscars?
No.
They dressed up as they both wore tuxes and pushed a dumpster around in the back and walked in. This is a few years ago. But those simpler times, man. You can't do that anymore.
No, not for sure.
Let's go try and play.
All right, let's go play.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. And tune in tomorrow. I think we're going to edit this video and we'll put it up, you know, just agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I thought it wasn't edited.
How are you going to do this tomorrow?
You said it wasn't
edited. No, we're going to make a video of us playing golf.
Oh.
Are you into that?
Yeah.
Do you want to be? I mean. What's the stakes again? We should find the stakes out right now.
Watch.
No.
Okay.
I can't. I mean, I gotta get a closer look at yours before I wager.
Yeah, you.
See, but the thing is, we're gonna have to table this discussion.
Okay. We're going to play for something.
We're going to play for something.
Yeah.
You say that really sinister.
Okay.
We're playing for something. All right. Thanks for listening, right, everybody. Thanks for your... Thank you for your time.
Yeah, soon.